is Histories and Mysteries Uncovered. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Jessica. And on this week's episode, Ashley and Ashley alone will be talking about the Idaho murders.
It's a really long one. So we decided that instead of making it a two-parter, making everybody wait, we would just do it all in one episode.
Yeah. So I'm going to stand idly by crying.
It's really sad.
But I have a really fun story for you guys next week.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear that one.
Ashley sent it to me because I'm like, I don't know what to do.
And it's just so absurd. I was like, you have to do this one.
It's the funniest shit, I think. It's in the same league as the Emu Wars. So next week's going to be fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah. This week's going to be sad.
Great.
Yes.
Ill prepared.
I'm also fighting some food poisoning and my daughter's sick. So it's been a day.
Hey, I just kicked my husband out of our bedroom for the night because he potentially has pink eye.
Oh, no.
Strep again. So.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he's going to sleep in the spare room.
Good luck, Kyle.
Yeah. He's like, I would never do that to you. And I'm like, yeah, you would.
You have to work. Can't both be sick.
Well, and I essentially was just like, yeah, you can like stay as far away from me as humanly possible. So anyways, let's get this show on the road. I don't know anything about it.
Okay. It's recent.
Oh, well, I live under a true crime rock and we don't get a lot of American news. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, like the trial hasn't even started yet. So eventually I'll have to come back and do a coverage on the trial.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got so many resources. CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, all the three-letter news stations. Dateline, Independent UK, Newsweek, New York Times, Toronto Sun, and the New York Post. Yeah. So
I'm waiting.
So one of the victims, her last name is, the whole time I was typing this out, I was saying it one way, and then I watched a news story on it and they said it a completely different way. And I was like, oh man. So now I had to like write it out so I didn't say it wrong. But Kaylee Gonsalves and Maddie Mogan were best friends, more like sisters, everyone would say. They met in sixth grade and they formed a bond that would last until the very end. Kaylee was a sweet little girl. Her mom said she had tons of spirit and was so fun. She said she was like a little princess and wanted to do all the fancy girl stuff. When she met Maddie, she came home just gushing about the new friend that she had made. And eventually the two girls were at each other's homes so often that they were basically part of each other's families. Kaylee's parents said that Maddie was like their second daughter. And as the two grew older, they faced all of life's challenges together. They went through middle school and high school together, which we all know can be rough, and it can be awesome, but
I know some areas here have a middle school. It was newer when I was going in to like grade 7-ish.
Okay.
But I never experienced it.
So generally we do K through 5 and then 6, 7, and 8 is middle school and then 9 through 12 is high school.
But why?
I don't know.
That just seems so weird. Like why would you move them schools halfway through?
Like through their whole career?
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe because middle schoolers are a little too old to be with elementary kids, but a little too young to be with high school kids.
So the middle school kids aren't with the high school kids?
No, generally they're in their own building. And my school even had an intermediate school. So we had K through 5. No, what is it, K through four, and then fifth and sixth was intermediate, and then seven and eight was middle, and then 9 through 12 was high school. That's a lot.
Why?
Well, it's just the way our school system's set up.
See, I'm pretty sure that our middle school, those kids were at the high school.
Okay, yeah, we're in separate buildings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there we go, all my Canadian listeners. And so they went through all that together, and they also decided to go to the same college, the University of Idaho. Kaylee's parents said that the university was their home away from home. They loved it. She said that you could see their happiness radiating from the pictures they took. Kaylee was a senior majoring in general studies, and Maddie was also a senior majoring in marketing. They were both part of the Greek life, as was their other roommate, Zanna Coronado. Zanna was kind and loving sister, Jasmine, her sister said. She said, "You rarely get to meet someone like Zanna. She was so positive, funny, and was loved by everyone who met her. She was so lighthearted and always lifted up a room." She was a member of Pi Beta Phi and was studying marketing, but she was only a junior. So unlike Kaylee and Maddie, who are seniors, Zanna was a junior. Okay. She was also dating Ethan Chaplin, whose mother described as lighting up every room he walked into. He was kind, loyal, and loving, and he was a set one in a set of triplets, which is kind of fun fact. He was majoring in recreation, sports, and tourism management, but was also part of the Greek life in the Sigma Chi frat. And Zanna and Ethan had been dating for a few years at this point. Kylie had just recently moved out of the house that her and Maddie and Zanna shared just off campus. She was due to graduate in December, and she had already secured a job at a tech firm in Austin, Texas. But she decided to go back to the home to visit her old roommates and go to a party the weekend of November 12th. That night, Ethan and Zanna went to a frat party on campus. And since Kaylee and Maddie were 21, they decided to go to the bars instead. And it's believed that they were there from about 10 p.m. to 1:30 a.m., where they were seen at a food truck called Grub Truck. Is there that anything
so yummy?
I was say, is there anything better than a food truck while you're drunk? No,
food trucks are
drunk or sober. Most amazing, I love food things. Trucks. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
we have a store here called Canadian Tire, and I don't even know what it could be compared to, but it has everything. It's like it has an automobile section, obviously, mm-hmm. and a garage and whatnot, and then it has like your sporting goods, hunting stuff, recreational, that kind of crap.
Okay, so kind of sounds like maybe one of our Dick's Sporting Goods, but with vehicle cars. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah,
but they have, I don't know what it is, but they have the best food trucks out front. That's it's awesome. Like one that's stationed there. Uh-huh. And I don't know what it is, but their sausages are just, they're so good.
There was this really good one in Charleston, right on like the main drag where the bars were. And it was like, I can't even remember what kind of food it was because I was always drunk when I went. But it was almost like a gyro, but like not. And it was just like covered in sauce and toppings. And you just like get it everywhere, but you're drunk, so you don't care. It was
kind of like a donair.
What's that? Maybe.
Oh, donair.
Yeah,
it's an East Coast thing, but it sounds like it's shaved spiced meat.
Yeah,
with like a really delicious sauce.
Oh, I bet that's what it was.
Yeah, it's like a donair sauce. It's kind of sweet.
Okay,
very good.
Oh, now I want one. All right. So police believe that the two girls returned home around 1:45 a.m. on what was now November 13th. They did have two other roommates who were on the main floor. So it went the two roommates on the main floor, then Xana on the second floor, and then Maddie and Kaylee were on the third floor. And I don't know where Kaylee's room was, but she was staying with Maddie. So she was staying in Maddie's room. The house was a three-floor, six-bedroom house, which is huge. But
it's huge.
Yeah, but it's a college house, so I'm sure it wasn't, like, super nice, you know?
Well, it's kind of like the house that my cousin stayed at when she was in university. Mm-hmm. Their house was, I think it was my it was like 2 to 3 floors. So it was pretty big. And obviously everybody lived on the different floors and they were decent.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were nice.
Yeah. And then they think that Ethan and Xana returned home about 1:56 a.m. So not too much later than Kaylee and Maddie. At about 4 a.m., Xana ordered DoorDash and had it delivered, which same girl, same. And a few hours later, okay, so this is where it's going to get kind of graphic. So not like super graphic, but just kind of creepy. Just, yeah. A few hours later, one of the surviving roommates, who they called DM, and they did release her name in a court document, but originally she went as DM. So I'm just going to keep her DM for her privacy. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Said that she woke up hearing what she thought was Kaylee playing with her dog. Then she thought she heard Kaylee say something like, "There's someone here." But it could have been Xana on her phone that Kaylee was talking about, because Xana did make a TikTok about 4:12 a.m. She said she peeked out of her door but didn't see anything, so she shut it. And then a little bit later, she said she heard crying and a male voice say, "It's okay, I'm going to help you." DM said that she then saw a figure clad in black clothing and a mask covering the person's mouth and nose walking toward her. She described the person as 5'10 or taller, male, not very muscular, but athletically built with bushy eyebrows. She said that the male walked right past her and she just stood there frozen in shock. She said the man walked towards the back sliding glass door and she ran and locked herself in her room. Meanwhile, at about 4:17 a.m., a security camera that was less than 50 feet from Xana's room picked up a dog barking and a distorted audio of voices or a whimper and then a loud thud.
Can I just say, I know we talk a lot about a lot of true crime on here, but it just seems otherworldly when you're talking about TikTok.
Yeah.
It's so recent.
Yeah.
Right? Like in this past November, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That's outrageous. That's insane.
Yeah. It makes it a little bit more like when it's older and times are different and everything's different, you can kind of remove yourself so much more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But when you hear stuff like this, it's a little bit more, wow.
Oh, shit. That stuff still happens nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. Later that morning, the other two roommates woke up, called some friends over, probably freaking out, and called 911 just before noon, saying that there was an unconscious person at the home. So a lot of people are asking, well, if DM saw a man, why did she go back to bed and not alert anyone for hours? And no one knows.
The police?
Yeah. And no one knows for sure. But police and a psychologist who worked for the police believe that she was just frozen in fear. An anonymous source said that they spoke to DM and she said that she believed it was just a friend that came back from the party with one of them. But the affidavit seems to follow the theory that she was frozen with fear. A former FBI agent tweeted the following. Let's talk DM. 21 years old, late, possibly under the influence, face to face with a stranger in black, just feet away, froze due to fear. Locked herself in the bedroom. I believe DM passed out from trauma, fear, stress. To think you could be killed is gripping.
Yeah. Well, I was saying that too, that she could have been under the influence.
Mm-hmm.
They were partying. They came home late. Who knows how much sleep she's gotten in the last little while.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And both, and I'll say this right off the top, that both the two surviving roommates have been ruled out as having anything to do with it.
Okay.
Yeah. When police arrived to the scene, it was a horrifying sight. All four young adults, Maddie, Kaylee, Zanna, and Ethan, were stabbed to death. Maddie and Kaylee were in Maddie's room. Kaylee's mom said that the bed was practically the size of the room, and when you opened the door, it would like barely miss the bed. They found Maddie in her bed, and poor Kaylee was on the floor, trapped in the corner, sitting up but slumped over. They found a Marine Corps knife sheath by the girls, and Zanna and Ethan were found in the next floor, stabbed to death as well. The coroner said that each of them had multiple stab wounds in multiple different areas. She allegedly spoke with Kaylee's father and told him that the wounds were, quote, big open gouges, and that it was quick. She said that there wouldn't have been enough time to even call 911. So like, they weren't sitting there bleeding out, suffering. She said it would have been really quick. News Nation reported that Kaylee's injuries were significantly worse than Maddie's. And the odd thing about all this is that they were on the top floor. So because they found the knife sheath in their room, police believe that they were killed first. So the killer would have had to walk all the way up the stairs first. And this, coupled with the worst injuries on Kaylee, makes some people think that maybe she was the target. Although a former FBI profiler said that sometimes you see worse injuries in someone who put up the most fight and angered the murderer the most.
What do you think? I feel like if she was the target, that obviously the two girls in that one room would have gotten it, right? Because there's no escaping.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two, Zanna and Ethan.
Yeah.
Right? It just doesn't make.
Yeah. No, that's a great point.
It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were in their rooms, clearly the other two people that survived, they were locked away in their rooms. So yeah. Clearly he wasn't
here. Just going for them and leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense unless the other two kind of left the room when they heard the noise.
Well, they were found in their room. Oh. So, yeah, no, but that's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that. That, yeah, and especially because I'm sure their door was closed, because if she was making TikToks at, you know, 4 a.m., I'm sure she had her door shut.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good point.
It just doesn't make any sense why he would not finish the job with the other two.
Well, there is some speculation from police on that. They think that the killer just got tired. They said stabbing four adults so brutally would be physically very hard. And they think that maybe he just got tired and was kind of in a daze when he walked past the other roommate.
Oh.
So like maybe he had gone in with the intentions of killing everyone, but then, because when you see their suspect, who it's probably him, he's not, look, he doesn't have like big arms, you know, he's not like super strong or buff or anything. So, and another weird thing is, remember how police were called to the scene to, and the cause was an unconscious person? And the question was, why would the roommate say an unconscious person if this was such a horrific stabbing? And there's an explanation for that. So apparently civilian employees at Whitcom 911, an agency in Pullman, Washington, handled the 911 calls to Moscow police, which is University of Idaho is in Moscow, Idaho, and several other agencies. And they do the 911 calls to the Moscow police and several other agencies. And apparently they are severely understaffed. So much so that the Dispatchers Guild, which I guess is a thing, has warned that their, quote, our ability to uphold public safety is at risk. So apparently under standard protocol, when a caller is agitated, the dispatcher assigns the call with a label of unconscious person rather than, quote, waste valuable time and resources trying to gather specific details. So if the roommate's called upset, they would just be like, oh, it's an unconscious person. So that's why the police probably got the label of unconscious person. So after visiting the scene, police immediately start to investigate. They take the sheath of the knife and send it to the lab for processing. They also notice that there were security cameras by the house. After viewing the video, they noticed something kind of weird. There was a white Hyundai Elantra that drove past the house three times that night / morning. Then at 4:04 a.m., the car enters the area that the house is in. Police were able to track this car all of the way back to Pullman, Washington. The only problem is they didn't have a clear view of the license plate. So they decided to look at how many registered vehicles there were for white Hyundai Elantras. There were 22,000 in the area. And that might not even be all of them. So Captain Roger Lanier said in a video statement, but it may not be all of them, so the public can help us. Maybe one of your neighbors has one in the garage that they don't drive that often. Maybe there's one that's just not in the registration database. Let us know. But they were able to finally track down that specific Hyundai Elantra through various cameras to Pullman, Washington.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And Pullman and Moscow are only like 12 miles away from each, or 12 minutes, 9 miles away from each other. So it's not like far. As the investigation continued, family and community gathered to grieve on November 30th for a candlelight vigil. Ethan's mom, Stacy, said, "We are eternally grateful that we spent so much time with him. That's the most important message that we have for you and your families, to make sure that you spend as much time as possible with those people, because time is precious and it's something you can't get back." Kaylee's dad said, "The only cure to pain is love. It's the only thing that's going to heal us. It's the only thing that's going to heal you. That will make a difference. And that's something that they can see where they're at right now, that you changed your life a little bit, that you're a little bit nicer, a little bit kinder." Maddie's dad, Ben, told the crowd in Moscow that she was an only child, so everything she ever did was a big deal, talking about Maddie was his pride. He said that the two loved attending music concerts together. He said, "When I would meet people ever since she was first born and they would say, 'Tell me about yourself,' the first thing I would say is, 'I have this daughter. Here's a picture of her. She's on the dean's list at college. She works hard. She has these friends at her sorority. They went to high school together. Then they started looking at colleges. They came here together. They eventually got into the same apartment together. And in the end, they died together in the same room, in the same bed. It's a shame and it hurts, but the beauty of the two always being together comforts us."
Yeah. That's my biggest fear as a parent with only one child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, I have my stepson and I love the kid, but he's not my blood kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't imagine having one child and then just losing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I get the two mixed up, but he classified the other one as like a daughter too.
Mm-hmm.
You're losing both your kids in the same traumatic swoop.
Yeah.
It's just horrible.
Absolutely.
And I looked up a picture of the suspect.
Mm-hmm. Wait till I get into him.
Oh, he looks like a creepy old man.
Yeah, he's creepy looking.
Yeah. And scrawny. Mm-hmm. I don't doubt the whole got tired thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's not one that's hitting the gym often. So meanwhile, the investigation continued. Police called in the FBI and the weapon sheath testing came back. And it did have DNA on it, but it didn't match anyone in the system. So police sent it for more extensive testing. And they started looking at genealogy websites, which we've talked about on a few other cases we've done. They started to build a family tree. And on December 27th, it came down to local Washington State University, Brian Koberger. And I'm not 100% sure that's how you say his last name, but I don't really give a fuck. So I hope I said it wrong.
Yeah, it's a really, really wild last name.
Yeah. I think it's Koberger, but I didn't care enough to look it up.
I would think so.
Yeah.
It's Koberger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Koberger seems like the proper, but who gives a shit?
Exactly.
He's a dickhead.
They then went to his home and collected some DNA from his trash and compared the DNA to the DNA on the knife sheath. And it matched the father of the person who left the DNA on the knife sheath. So basically they had grabbed something that was Brian's dad and used it. But it told him that his son's DNA matched what was found on the knife sheath. Sadly, on December 15th, Brian and his dad were driving from Washington to Pennsylvania for the holidays, and Brian was stopped twice by police, once for speeding and then 9 minutes later for traveling too close to another vehicle. But they didn't know he was a suspect yet, so they just let him go.
Oh, I hate that so
much. I know. I hate it. Oh,
what are the odds?
Mm-hmm. But don't worry, he wasn't free for long after. 15 days later, on December 30th, Brian was arrested and charged with first-degree murder and burglary. On January 4th, Brian was extradited from Pennsylvania to Idaho. And on January 5th, Brian had the first of what will be many court appearances, where basically the court decides if the prosecution has enough evidence to go to trial.
I keep looking at his picture.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out if he's a young adult or a grown-ass adult. There are pictures where he looks like he's the same age as the victims. And then other pictures, you know, like of him in a suit at court where he looks like he's a 40-year-old man.
I think you'll be surprised at his age.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think you'll be surprised at it. Well, not really surprised. It'll like check with chart, but interesting.
It's at least within my range.
Yes. Okay. Well, kind of. Anyway, we'll get there. Okay. So this is when the affidavit for this court appearance listed every bit of evidence that we have mentioned previously. This is where the interview with DM came about, the stuff about the car. And Brian lived in Pullman, Washington, which, if you remember, is where the white Honda Elantra was traced back to. He did, in fact, own a white Honda Elantra registered to him, but he didn't register it in the state of Washington until 5 days after the murder, where he got a new license plate.
That seems like a bad
slip
up.
So in Canada, do you have to register your vehicle? Like if you go to different provinces, like if you move to a different province, you have to re-register your vehicle and get that province's license plate?
I have no idea. I've never moved provinces with a car before. Oh,
okay.
I assume yes, but I don't actually know. Like, do you have to update your license too?
Yeah, we do.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, you're supposed to. You're supposed to do it like, I think it's like 30 days after you move there. You're supposed to get a new license plate and a new license. But most people just wait till your license expires or your license plate expires and then you just do it.
That's rude. I love my license plate.
Yeah, so his vehicle was registered in Pennsylvania.
Ooh, and I've been there.
Yes, you have. And it was due to expire November 30th. So he waited to register his car in the state of Washington until after the murders happened.
That seems, I don't know if that's smart or stupid.
I think he thought it was going to be smart.
Yeah.
But I think
it kind of suspicious. Put a massive red flag on him.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think he thought he was going to be smart with it.
Oh, absolutely. What a dumbass.
But wait, there's more. They were able to track Brian's phone heading to Moscow just before the murders, which is, again, only about 9 miles or 12 minutes from his home in Pullman, Washington. His phone then conveniently shut off that night from 2:47 a.m. to 4:48 a.m., which police believe he did to hide his location while he was committing the murders.
That makes sense.
And again, I think he's like, oh, look how clever I am. But again, it's like, well, that's kind of suspicious, dude.
Well, it goes back to the whole, it seems more personable because of how recent this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people always joke, oh, I could totally get away with murder because of all these true crime podcasts we have now and, you know, all these TV shows, literally a show on how to get away with murder.
And literally the title.
Yeah. And this guy's just going out at it, thinking he's going to
outsmart everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is all going to fit in a couple bits of information that I found about him. It's all going to kind of come together.
He just sounds like a dumb dick. He looks like a dumb dickhead too.
He does.
He looks like somebody either I know or another celebrity. And I cannot place it.
Well, and if at the end I'll have you look up the pictures of the victims and
I've seen them.
Oh my god.
They're all so gorgeous.
So gorgeous. Beautiful. Yes. And you can tell, like, one of the really famous pictures of them is they're standing outside their house and one of them is on the shoulders of the other one.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. And they look so happy and so full of life.
Yeah. And like really good friends. Yeah. And just really excited for their future.
Yeah. On the cusp of everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's so tragic.
It's horrible.
So also his phone was near the victim's house at least 12 times before the murders, tracing all the way back to August.
Ew. So this was totally preemptive stalking.
And which is one of the reasons why it makes me kind of think that maybe Kaylee was a target.
Yeah.
But then again, with your thought of then, well, why did he go in and kill Xana and Ethan?
Yeah.
And maybe Kaylee was the target and he was just going to kill everybody, but he got tired and stopped at them.
I have a feeling, and I'm not just saying because it was my idea, but but Kaylee and Maddie were on the top floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And DM said that she heard a thud.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is that Ethan and Xana also heard that thud.
Oh, maybe.
And poked their head out to investigate or went up to investigate. And the guy shuffled them back into their rooms.
Oh, maybe.
And then killed them.
Yeah. Ugh.
Because maybe they walked in on him.
Yeah. 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 And I could see where, like, Ethan being the only guy in the house is like, let's go check it out. Make sure they're okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I can totally see that.
Yeah.
Oh,
how horrifying, though. Is the dog okay?
They never said. So I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So all of those phone calls too, or all the time that they traced his phone, those 12 times that his phone was near their place, was always either late at night or early in the morning, except for one time, which is creepy as fuck.
Is he a teacher? He looks like he could be a teacher.
Is he a teacher? He taught some college courses because he was getting his PhD. Yeah.
He totally just looks like that creepy ass teacher.
That would like totally hit on you as a student.
He looks like Mr. Schuster from Glee.
Oh, no. What's that actor's name? Matt. Is it Matt Morrison?
Yeah. No.
Or Matt.
Monteith. No, that's Corey Monteith. Yeah, Matt Morrison.
Or Matt Morrison.
Yeah, he looks like a tall, skinny version of him.
A much uglier version.
I don't think Matt Morrison's that attractive, but yeah.
No, I think he's kind of cute.
No. I don't know him as a human being, obviously, but him playing that character is totally turned
just was awful. Yeah. So his phone was also found near the house at 9:12 a.m. and 9:21 a.m. the morning of the murder. So like he went back. But as the many questions that Jessica's been asking, who is no, it's fine. Who is the 28-year-old? Brian Koberger.
Yeah, I was like, he's probably going to be around my age.
Yep, 28. And why did he do this? So
he's a skeez.
Yes. Brian was a PhD student at Washington State University studying. Can you guess, Jessica? Criminology.
Oh.
Criminology.
I was going the whole Glee route.
No, he studied criminology, which is,
So he really was just trying, to boost his own ego. Like, I could totally get it.
Uh-huh. I think so. And yeah, he had even applied for an internship fall of 2022 with the Pullman Police Department. And in his essay application, he wrote that he was interested in, quote, assisting rural law enforcement agencies with how to better collect and analyze technological data in public safety operations. Which is,
oh my gosh,
okay, but this is creepy. He had also previously posted in Reddit, which is now deleted. I looked for it, asking for participation in a research project that he was conducting to, quote, understand how emotions and psychological traits influence decision making when committing a crime.
There it is.
The post said, in particular, this study seeks to understand the story behind your most recent criminal offense with an emphasis on your thoughts and feelings throughout your experience. Which, like, okay, yeah, that sounds really interesting. If you're not a murderer.
Yeah, it seems like he was conducting an experiment.
Well, we're going to dive into his personality a little bit more. And it's all going to make sense. So another PhD student that worked with Brian said that he seemed comfortable around other people. He was very quick to offer his opinions and thoughts. He said that Brian seemed to be highly intelligent, saying that he would describe things in the most complicated, perhaps academic way possible. It was like he was trying to convince people that he knew what he was talking about.
What a skeez.
So we all know people like that, right? That are like, oh, look how smart I am.
Absolutely. My husband.
No, Kyle.
Okay.
Good one, Jess. Oh god. No, I used to work with a person who was like, oh, actually I've worked with a couple. So As I've talked about before, I used to be a high school science teacher, right? And people that are in the science field tend to think that they're smarter than everybody else. However, the people I worked with were high school teachers. And I'm like, guys, we are not solving cancer here. You gotta calm down the attitude. Like, we're not that intelligent. Like, it's, we're not working for NASA here. So anywho, he was like one of those people. People who knew Brian when he was younger said that he was a little awkward, but not like super awkward where you'd be like, oh yeah, that's a murderer. Brian graduated high school in 2013, but he apparently had a very large transformation in high school. He was pretty overweight, so he was bullied a lot, but his senior year, he lost about 100 pounds. His high school classmate said, it was after that weight loss that a lot of people noticed a huge shift. The classmate said that her brother was friends with Brian, but would also get bullied by him. When Brian would get kind of angry with him, he would gaslight him and get physically aggressive, she said. She also added that Brian would put her brother in chokeholds. She then claimed that Brian started using heroin. She said, you just saw him becoming more self-destructive. He really stayed secluded. The classmate said that years later, she ran into him and he was telling her that he wanted to get sober, that he was getting sober, and that he wanted to let me know, I'm going to do better. I'm going to be better. And then in 2017, at a friend's wedding, she said she gave him a hug and said, you look so good. I'm so proud of you. And she thought that he had a new focus, his studies in criminology. She said his goal was to change the world for good around him. He wanted to do something that impacted people in good ways, says Bree. People were not his strong suit. And I think through his criminology studies, he was really trying to understand humans and trying to understand himself.
That's no excuse.
No, absolutely not.
To murder people.
No, but I think it's interesting how when he lost the weight, everybody noticed the shift in his personality. He became more aggressive, started doing drugs, and I think probably in a way became more confident in himself and more of that, look how smart I am. But also because he was bullied, he always had that insecurity that he had to prove how smart he was. You know what I mean? Oh,
yeah, of course. But still.
Oh, no, I'm just.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. And yeah. I'm having a hard time trying to find the correlation between his personality and his weight loss.
I think,
unless it was all drug related.
And it possibly could be because they said that's where that shift happened. For some reason, when he lost the weight, he just became more of an ass. And I don't know if that was the drugs or maybe some confidence he was feeling. And that was kind of his real personality coming out, that he's just kind of a dick. So as for the why, we may never know. I hope it comes out in court, but my guess is that it won't. One former FBI agent does have a theory, though. He said he thinks Brian is the embodiment of the incel complex. And I'm going to talk about that in a second, but the murders may have been an effort to assert some type of dominance. I believed a continued stabbing of a victim indicates an uncontrollable rage and extreme anger. Brian has been described as socially awkward with a long history of interpersonal problems. I think he may have developed a sort of incel complex. So, do you know what an incel is, Jess?
No.
It stands for, or like it's short for, involuntarily celibate. And it's
why?
It's an online community of men who have difficulty with romantic or sexual relationships with women. And basically they blame women for it. They're often misogynistic and sometimes violent. So basically it's like, well, women don't like me because, you know, women are, you know, stupid or whatever, you know, just really misogynistic type thoughts. And so they're called incels and they identify as that. It's like a badge of honor for them.
Why would you ever want to be known like that?
Because there's a interesting documentary coming out about the incels of Australia, which I want to watch. But I think it's because it's in their community. They have like a community of these shitty men that hate women. And so they can all be like, oh yeah, you know, women suck or whatever. And a former classmate of Bryant's said that the whole clique of popular girls made fun of him in school, the cheerleaders and the ones that every kid had crushes on. And in 2011, before Brian had graduated, when he was still getting bullied, he said that he felt like, quote, like an organic sack of meat with no self-worth. And so a forensic scientist said, I've been saying from the beginning that he's an incel, that his choice of victims and his alleged return to the scene of the crime pointed in that direction. Incels like to be known for when they kill people or when they have a conquest like this. On the one hand, he wanted to commit the perfect crime and not be caught. But on the other hand, he did want to be caught and be proud in a sense of what he did. Other acquaintances of Brian said that he was frustrated by females and even sexist at times. In fact, several months prior to the murders, Brian was at Seven Sirens Brewing Company, where he had visited several times and always just kind of sat alone at the bar observing and watching people. But this one particular night, he was harassing the women who worked there. And apparently this brewery has a really cool system where when you scan IDs, the staff can have little notes about people in there. And there was a note on him that said, hey, this guy makes creepy comments. Keep an eye on him. He'll have two or three beers and then just get a little too comfortable.
But it doesn't make sense with Ethan.
I think Ethan was just there.
Yeah.
And I have a theory, and I'll get to it after all this, but I do have kind of a theory.
Okay.
He would apparently ask staff or customers, women only, of course, who they were at the brewery with, where they lived, like really personal kind of questions. And when they didn't seem interested, he would get upset with them a little bit. One time, even going as far as to calling an employee a bitch when she didn't want to answer his questions. The last time Brian visited the brewery, one of the male workers confronted him, saying that he went up to him and said, hey, Brian, welcome back. We appreciate you coming back. I just want to talk to you real quick and make sure that you're going to be respectful this time and we're not going to have any issues. He said that Brian was shocked that he was saying that. And he said, I don't know what you're talking about. You have me totally confused. He had one beer and never came back. So the next part of this, I kind of get into the court stuff. So I'm going to tell my theory here. So the theory is that he's an incel, right? And he hates women. Couple that with the fact that Kaylee's wounds were worse. Not everybody was killed. And the fact that he was criminology and he always wanted to prove how smart he was. I think, and the fact that he had been near their house 12 times prior, I think he probably tried to show interest in Kaylee. And at some point, she had turned him down and he got pissed. And he thought that since he was a criminology major, he could get away with the perfect crime and not get caught. And so he went with the intention of killing her and then everybody else there, but he did get tired and stopped. And that's kind of my theory.
Yeah, I kind of figured that it was her turning him down at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we've seen it before. We've talked about it before on this podcast. When a woman turns a man down, he loses his shit and murders her. Like, this isn't a new thing, you know? It's awful. So fast forward to May 22nd, 2023. Brian finally had his arraignment. Oh, and I'm sorry. Before I said it was this past November, it wasn't. It was the previous. But Brian finally had his arraignment where he chose to stand silent. He didn't even enter a plea, just stood silently. And because of this, the judge entered a plea of not guilty on his behalf and set a trial date for October 2nd, 2023. On August 23rd, Brian's trial was postponed indefinitely when he waived his right to a speedy trial. So what does this mean? Basically, a preliminary hearing had to take place within 14 days, but since he waived his right, it doesn't have to. So that gives the defense more time to discover new information on the case. I think they also want the public's memories to kind of die down on this case before they select a jury, because everybody in that area is so, it's still so recent, so in the news, you know, so at the forefront of people's minds. I think the defense is thinking like the longer we can push this off, you know, the less effect it will have on people. So maybe we can get some jury in here that isn't so upset about everything that happened, is my thought.
Yeah.
So his preliminary hearing is scheduled to take place June 26th of this year at 9 a.m. But recently, like 5 days ago recently, the state declared that it wanted to start the trial this summer to avoid the school year and wanted to like stop forcing the victim's family to relive the pain of losing their children. Like they wanted to get this done, you know, so their family could have closure and move on. But Brian's lawyer said she didn't think they'd be ready by the summer and wanted to push it to the summer of 2025 and also wanted a change of venue. The judge, his name's John Judge, so he's Judge Judge, said that he was concerned about the delay. He said, "This is a complicated case. This could take a long time, longer than any of us thought. And I think this would add an additional delay." He added, "Do we need a whole nother year?" His lawyer said that they had to go through 51 terabytes of data, and the earliest she could be ready was March of 2025, and that she was even nervous telling him that she'd be ready by summer of 2025. Which I didn't know you could do that, like as an attorney, just be like, oh, I'm not going to be ready, so let's push it back. Like, I didn't know that was a thing.
Well, and how shitty of a lawyer do you have to be to not be ready in over a year?
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes no sense to me. Clearly, you're not supporting the right side if you can't get your shit together by then.
You're right.
Makes no sense.
It doesn't. But the state attorney did say that if they couldn't do it this summer, they would prefer to wait until next summer to avoid the school year. Brian's attorneys added, "This isn't our attempt to achieve some delay. This is our attempt to achieve due process," which it's your attempt to delay. But they have been accused of filing endless motions to prolong the trial. And as of yet, a trial date has not been set. On November 13th, 2023, the university held a student-led vigil to mark 1 year since the 4 students' lives were tragically taken. We want to ensure...
Huh. I thought you said it like just happened in 2023.
Yeah, I said that I misspoke. It was a year before. I was thinking we were still in 2023, but we are in fact in 2024.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It happened 2022.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sorry. The president of the Associated Students of the University of Idaho said, "We want to ensure we continue to tell their stories, to honor their legacy, and to provide a place where each student can heal." On November of 2022, the house on King Road was demolished.
That's nice.
So that is the horrible story of the Idaho murders. And I'm hoping that once they get a trial set, I can come back and kind of go over the trial details in a new story and see kind of what else comes out in the trials. You know, I'm interested to see what, if any, excuse he has, or if he just goes the whole time denying it, you know?
Or if it's going to be a insanity.
Yeah.
Plea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
interested to see what his defense comes up with, because I think that evidence is stacked against him for sure. And I think that emotions are going to be really heightened. And I think it's going to be a really rough trial.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Well,
and unfortunately, that's the only story you get. So you have to end the podcast with this horrible feeling. I apologize, listeners.
You can tell a joke.
Yeah, tell a joke.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
What is black and white and green all over?
Me this morning when I was throwing up. No, what?
Or a pickle in a tuxedo.
That's cute. I like that.
What did one toilet say to the other toilet?
I don't know what.
You look flushed.
I was thinking it had something to do with flush or bowl.
Mm-hmm. What is a vampire's favorite fruit?
What?
I was going to say a fruit gusher. But it's a nectarine.
Oh, that's funny. I like that.
Yeah. This one's fun. I'll end it on this one.
Okay.
The shovel. What a groundbreaking invention.
Oh, good dad jokes. Good dad jokes. Yeah. Well, if you want more of us lovely ladies, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, and Patreon. Join our Patreon for $3. You get a bonus episode every month and a sticker.
Yes. And you can rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. And we look forward to bringing you 2 new stories next week.
Bye. Bye.